Welcome back to the Indie Corner, guys. Episode 99 with myself, Stuart Rogers. Not much going on this week, but I have got a little chat with the one and only aerial assassin, Will Ospreay. I'll have to let you know, we recorded a good chunk of the interview and like covered all the stuff I had prepared to ask Will. And then we had some technical difficulties, and like the last like three or four main things I wanted to ask him, we couldn't get done. Due to, like I say, technical problems, and due to scheduling conflicts, we haven't been able to reconvene, so to speak, to finish the interview as of yet. So, you know, I didn't get to talk to him really about his little bit in TNA that he did on the UK tour recently. Look forward to, you know, the WXW 16 carat gold tournament, which is ongoing as I speak to you right now. And of course, I didn't get to chat with him about his upcoming New Japan tour, or his shows that are coming up in Dallas over WrestleMania weekend. I hope to catch up with him shortly to cover these topics and other bits and bobs as well. But I do hope that you enjoy what we have recorded. I know I did some interesting stuff on there. So what we'll do now, just before we head to that, we'll just do a little bit of news. RevPro have dived further into, you know, like the on-demand service as far as wrestling online is concerned. They also will still be keeping their Vimeo account, where you can download and you know, keep shows that you can keep for a permanent basis. But they're also having an on-demand streaming service through the PivotShare streaming company, so, like the likes of, I think, is it Progress and ICW maybe that use that format as well. But on there, you know, away from the Vimeo stuff, you know, they are going to have a lot of older stuff on there, some really old classic, shall we say, you know, RevPro matches, and some old even IPW stuff match on there as well, including on there you can find the leaders of the new school, Zack Sabre Jr. and Marty Scurll against the Young Bucks from some years back. So yeah, that's one worth checking out. If any, like, to be directed over to where you can find the links for the on-demand service, the Vimeo one, and the new one via PivotShare, head over to their website, revolutionprowrestling.com. So like I say, their monthly subscription service, £6, which is nothing really, considering as well, we know what type of footage you're going to get. So just have a really quick break, and then we'll be back with that little chat I had with the aerial assassin, Will Ospreay. And here we are, guys. It's been a long time since I've had this guy on the Indie Corner. One of my first interviews since I started doing the show solo. But I'm very glad to have him back on the show. He's very much the talk of the town as far as the independent scene is at the moment. It has been for a number of years, to be honest with you. So I just want to welcome back to the Indie Corner the one and only aerial assassin, Will Ospreay. So, you know, much has happened to your good self since I last spoke to you, Will. But first things first, how are you today?
Oh, I'm very well, man. How are you? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm okay. Like yourself, you know, going out, grinding out a living, but just in different circumstances. But that's what it's all about. But yeah, you know, looking forward to this. We've been talking a while about getting you back on, and I'm glad now that there was a slight delay in doing it, just because of your latest news, which we'll get onto in a bit. So yeah, we'll get cracking and ask some stuff and look forward to see what you get to say. So you know, you've had the chance to face some, you know, big stars on the indie scene, I should say, you know, from across America, the UK, whatever, and even in over the guys from Japan. One of these many matches was for RevPro in Reading. That was obviously against Okada. You know, for me personally, you know, this match was like the best match of that RevPro weekend. How was it? How did you find the match yourself? Type thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. It really pushed me to my limit, like the language barrier at points. But like all wrestling is like done with like English like words, isn't it? Like DDT and clothesline and stuff like that. And being like brutally honest, like I never really watched many Okada matches, so I didn't really know much of the moves there. I knew like he did the tombstone, the drop kick, and the rainmaker, but other than that, I was going in there completely blind, being honest. So, yeah, but
I
other than
mean,
that, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a real learning experience. It was like, it's not about like the moves, but like the selling of the moves, if you will. And Okada was just a great teacher in showing me what's the word I'm looking for? I've just completely lost the word that I'm looking for, but
no. Yeah.
he taught me a lot in that just one match, and I can't thank that guy enough because everything that's come from that match has led to why we're here today.
I mean, like obviously you got the language barrier and all that. So we're not talking about the actual match itself as like the technical aspect. But how did you find it working a guy like that who like say he's part of a New Japan roster who work shall we say like a stiff style? Did that come into it at all? Did you think
No, no,
this has
no.
been a different type of experience in
No,
that way?
I wouldn't even say that. It was just like one of these different type of experiences where, I really just kind of put it into words. Everything was just like really nice. Everything felt brilliant. Like going out there, the crowd were on fire for me. It was just like another day in the office, but like just with a lot more at stake when you've got the New Japan booker ringside and the New Japan president in the bloody audience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, for me, that was the best match of the two shows for RevPro that weekend. I shortly after the shows took place, I put a poll up on the website asking people what was their favorite match. Now, I don't think many people had got to see that match by that point, to be honest. I did put it up quite early. And you know, winning the poll was the three-way that you had the night before. It involved Marty. Offhand, you know, I know it's probably hard for you to pick because you was in the matches, involved in the matches. But would you, if you were to have a pick a favourite out of the two, what would you go with yourself?
At that weekend, I really just loved the AJ and Marty match. Like, yeah, I mean, it just matches my style, doesn't it? Like the unpredictable, like coming out, no holds, just using your imagination to be able to put on like a fantastic match. And obviously, me and Marty have got like the most strangest chemistry that you could ever probably have in wrestling because we have two completely different styles, but when put together, it's just magic. And AJ obviously is my absolute hero. Like the guy is the reason why I'm wrestling today. And we had a classic at the start of 2015, and it was just brilliant just getting in a ring with a pair of them and just see our imagination, I guess, come to life.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned obviously your singles match with Styles. That's what I was gonna talk about next. Because obviously, that all took place in RevPro, and sticking with RevPro, and like I say, you've been given some big opportunities, and that's what Andy from RevPro and RevPro as a whole, you know, are good for doing, putting out there and giving guys opportunities and that. And like I say, you've been in there with now WWE star AJ Styles, you know, former WWE performers like Matt Sydal. So you know, going into these type of matches, I mean, how was it for you? You know, did the nerves kick in, or did it differ to as to who you were facing? Like, going by what you just said, I imagine building up to facing Styles one on one, it was a bit different to anyone else.
It was very daunting facing AJ just because I remember how it was a really, really funny story actually because obviously they do the meet and greet beforehand and I still feel like I'm on like a top tier level to even be a part of a meet and greet sometimes. So the story goes that me, Shaw Samuels and James Castle actually went out for a Nando's while the meet and greet was going on and we came back and the meet and greet was still going on. So Andy found me and was just like, "What are you doing?" And I was just like, "Went out for food. I was hungry." And he was just like, "Basically, it was just like one of those things. You're main event in the show. You should be in the meet and greet." Like, do you know when you're just like, I don't even feel like with all these stars there. You know, there was Colt Cabana on the show. There was AJ on the show, and like there were loads. I can't even name them all right now, but. I was just like, well, what do these people want to do and see me for? Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the point of them seeing me when they've got guys like AJ who come around like once a every
Well,
however? Do you know what I mean?
yeah, it's funny how you've mentioned that. I remember going to one of the York Hall shows. I think it was the first one. That was it. And by the time I'd got into the meet and greet, the British guys were actually like leaving type thing. And I made a point. I've said to Chris Roberts, I said, "Oh, you know, the British guys going." He goes, "Oh," yeah. And he said basically what you said. You know, obviously these guys, the imports and that. You know, it's like a one-off chance to see them. They're gonna stay. The British guys, you can see anytime you want and all that. But you know, I actually wanted to see the British guys there and then. So it was an interesting one because, like I say, you go on to other shows and you do get to see them. So yeah, that was a similar
Yeah,
point.
I think because it was just after that where it was just like I was saying, I was sitting around for the meet and greet for a bit, and I sat around and it finally finished. And it was that moment where AJ just like came over to me and was just like, "Oh, I've seen all your stuff. I'm really looking forward to doing some work with you today." And I was like, "I don't, you've seen my stuff? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah." And like, it was just so like surreal.
Surreal.
Yeah, just being in the same room as the guy, but not even just being in the same room, but the same ring, and being in the main event with him. And like, the fact is that what keeps like me going in a way, it was like it was the aftermath when he had the IWGP Heavyweight title on his shoulder, and he was just like thanking everyone for the "this is awesome" stuff, and it was like, but it's not just me that was able to put on the main event. It takes two to tango. And like I believe we'll be doing this again sometime. I thoroughly believe that you'll be taking this title off me one day. And although that'll probably never happen, he's probably going to be with WWE for a while. You never know what the wrestling world is like. So,
Course.
but just the fact that he even said that, he puts me in the same category as like many other IWGP heavyweight champions. It was just mind blowing.
Because that was the thing, and all the foreigners that have held the IWGP heavyweight title, he's by far like the smallest guy because of all the foreigners that have held the title have all been like beasts, you know, like Bob Sapp, Brock Lesnar, people like that. So it showed like ushering a new era type thing with having someone of his stature as the
Yeah,
champion.
well, like one of the things that has been like really bugging me recently is that like loads of people really think these days that there's no real place for a headliner as a cruiserweight wrestler, and I think that's like bogus. And I think like guys like AJ are like proving that wrong. The guy was the IWGP heavyweight champion in the world, and like although that he's packed on a lot of size now, I mean he's not the tallest guy in the world, and
No.
he's not the biggest guy. And the way that he moves like a flyer. So like I still believe like guys like Ricochet could end up being like the headliner of an act. And I just feel like I think we're ushering in a new era where wrestling has evolved in some sense, where the high flying guys are the most entertaining guys to watch these days. So I feel like we're like the high flyers are going to be the guys headlining massive shows soon.
Well, you haven't got to convince me there. Anyone that listens to the show knows that that's the style I'm into. And it's all about like an attention span type thing, you know. For me to watch wrestling these days, for the amount of time I've been watching it, it's got to be something that keeps me entertained. And the style that you guys work, the likes of yourself, Ricochet, AJ Styles, and Matt Sydal, and them people, you know, work. It is the type of thing that is going to keep me, you know, captivated and watching all the time. You mentioned Ricochet there, again. Someone you've wrestled both in tag matches and singles. I was there for that outstanding match you had. I was like 3 rows back, when you and Paul wrestled, him and Rich Swann at York Hall, and that match was just easy the show stealer that night.
One of
But
my
you know,
favorite matches.
yeah, I mean, like I say, we all know how good he is, but from your standpoint, you know, a younger wrestler who wrestles a very similar style to him, what's it like being in there with Ricochet?
It's really, really cool, man. Like, I can't put into like words sometimes, just because, like, here's a guy that, once again, I used to watch this guy when I was 14, okay? This guy was doing, like, double moonsaults off ladders onto everybody, like, IWA Mid-South, and see him as Helios in Shikara. And I honestly, hand on heart, idolised the guy, and, like, and seeing all of his stuff in Dragon Gate, and when he won the Open the Dream Gate title, every time we get to wrestle Ricochet, it's, like, literally mind-blowing at the stuff we were able to do together to be able to... just, I don't know, just put two and two together and make magic in a way, like, you know what I mean? And it just blows my mind that to this day, like, this 14-year-old kid that used to watch these guys is now, like, not just in the ring with these guys, but is kind of like a competition in a way. Like,
yeah, I mean, pretty much
there's been in the ring with guys like AJ. In fact, this is a quote that I really liked from, this is from Christopher Daniels, and it was the day that I faced AJ. And he said, a lot of guys, when they face AJ, will be below him, like AJ carrying them through a match, and AJ will make them look good, make him look decent. And then Daniel said, like, there's guys that will maybe be on par with AJ, but not that many, and you're definitely up there. And I was like, wow, you know what I mean? I'm on par with AJ Styles from Christopher Daniels' point of view. And, you know, like, I think that's the thing that just makes it all worthwhile. Like, I'm kind of like the rival to these guys now, but in the same way, we're teammates in looking at and making wrestling like the thing to talk about in a way.
I mean, that's good praise from Daniels, because although I wasn't what you'd call a flyer, he was like a premium cruiserweight type wrestler. I mean, I've been watching him since like late 90s, from like, when he was doing the Super 8 tournaments for ECWA, and then obviously going through into the 2000s and all that. And now he's like, you know, he's a what you'd call a veteran that can still go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thing.
As opposed to just turning up, and it,
Daniels is like probably one of the best wrestlers out there these days. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough, me and Paul was once again lucky enough to face him and Kazarian for FPW October. I think it was like 2 years ago now, maybe even less than that. But their minds are just so good. They've got so many good, like it's the chemistry that these guys have is just, it's honestly just ridiculous. The fact that, like, once again, if you told that 14-year-old boy that you'd be wrestling like guys like Christopher Daniels, he'd be like, nah, I'm not. Like, don't lie.
Yeah. It's mad to think, isn't it? But flipping out, yeah. So moving on, other than RevPro, you know, you feature heavily on the Progress shows, you know, with their on-demand service, the product's seen worldwide, and, you know, and like yourself and like many of the other guys, you know, you do get a lot of praise from fans abroad and people that have been involved in wrestling at other levels abroad as well, which I've heard speak about yourself many times on various shows and that. What is it you think about Progress, you know, that people are taking in by?
I don't know. Maybe it's the adult environment. Maybe it's the fact, like, the fans are just mental. But me personally, I feel like they done, like, a little tagline, like, ages ago. And it was what Jim Smallman said on, like, a Channel 4 show that they done, I think it was even called Gadget Show, and Jim Smallman says the reason behind our success is hungry British talent. And I feel like, as British people, we're very, very proud. We're very, like, proud of our own, like, talent coming through, and I feel like when he said that, a lot of people wanted to get behind it. A lot of people wanted to say, you know what, yeah, we are, like, you know what we're like in the World Cup, we're the best, like, you know what I mean? I don't know, I keep saying like a lot, I just feel like when Progress decided to take the big jump and, like, start working in the electric ballroom, I feel like we was just a force to be reckoned with, and not with just the Britain, but with the world, because when we went over to Battle of Los Angeles, I keep saying it, Mark Andrews was in the ring, and I was waiting behind the curtain, about to do my entrance. And all I heard was the Osprey, 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 and it was literally like being home in the electric ballroom.
Yeah,
but I was in LA, so like, it just shows it just shows what we do in like places like Progress and Rev Pro and Southside and like any other like shows like around the British area. It just goes to show that it's a new generation dawning that British wrestling is starting to take over.
I mean, I think
Progress is leading it. Progress and Rev Pro are definitely leading that like British Revolution, I guess we can call it.
Yeah, I mean, we would have spoke about it in a previous interview, but I remember being there. My first Progress show was Chapter 2, which was your debut, I believe, in the tag match with Alex against the Riots. A bit looking back, you know, thinking that what you were doing then, didn't think lead on to obviously what you're doing now, and obviously you went on to be Progress champion and stuff like that. A bit, you know, it's again a surreal type thing for yourself.
Yeah, man. I mean, once again, like. When Progress debuted, I always just wanted to work for them just because straight away, like from their Chapter 1 show, it just got like the most insane reviews ever. So I was on about trying to get on there, and thankfully they offered me a slot, and it was like, you've got a choice of either being a singles wrestler or coming in as a tag wrestler. That was the option they gave me. And I wanted to be a tag wrestler because I've always wanted to share my limelight, like in a way. I've always wanted to travel with my mates. Because I think that's half the beauty of pro wrestling is like getting to see the world in so many different colours and so many different origins that, and you can have someone with you. And I picked Alex, but like Alex was nowhere near ready at the time, I guess. And to be fair, neither was I, but maybe I was just a couple of steps ahead of him. But I just knew from there, just once I got in front of that crowd, and to be fair, like, that crowd gave me a lot of shit that night. I can't swear.
Well. Yeah, of course, yeah.
I've been trying to be good for this whole interview and not swear, but...
I'm the worst.
I remember, like, people going, Justin Bieber, they're not 14. I was just sitting there just like, wow, like, this is brilliant. I'm getting heckled, but they're popping for me at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably, people are going to think he's just typical because I'm talking to yourself now. But I honestly can, with my hand on my heart, say, you know, I remember seeing you and I thought, you know, instantly you could tell the difference between yourself and Alex. And I honestly thought when you came in and you started doing the flashy moves against obviously the much bigger guys, I thought this is someone to watch. And like I say, people would say, you know, it's like, yeah, you would say that and all that. But you know, I honestly could see the bright future. And like I say, it's, how old are you now? 22. You just got tons more to do, man.
22. I'm 23 this May.
Yeah. I know when I was doing a bit of research, I was picking up, because I obviously knew you were young and 22, and I was thinking, can't believe that, just crazy, man. But yeah, big things, still big things to come. So moving on, you had a run with the Progress Championship, you took off, you know, the long-standing now former champion, Jimmy Havoc. I mean, in his role as a bad guy, explain what it was like chasing Jimmy for the title, and everything that happened.
I felt like it was going to be like a never-ending, like... climb or like a feud that we're probably going to be doing this for a long, long time, and probably the fans would never have got bored of it. But I don't know, everything that Jimmy gave to Progress with it, like the way he would talk and the different stylized character that he'd bring to British wrestling, I feel like that helped Progress grow quite a lot. And I don't know why they picked me or why they even like thought that I was the correct guy to go against this, like, this monster that is Jimmy Havoc, where he was, like, the talk of the British town. And there was just, like, I don't know, there was this little underdog in the background that was just, like, give me a shot, oh, I can do it. And yeah, do you know what I mean? And this was, like, around about the time, like, me and Jimmy were feuding around about the time I nearly broke my neck from the 630 injury. And I guess that just helped me push up the ladder, because I feel like the crowd felt a lot of sympathy for me and they just wanted to see a guy like me recover from that position and succeed.
I mean, I don't even think it was that. Obviously, the injury was a bad thing, and obviously you always had that in your matches, you know, would you go back to the top rope, stuff like that. But I think, like you say, why did they choose you? It was more to do with the fact of, you know, it was the fans, you know, loved watching you and the stuff you did. And I thought, you know, it's a promotion, a company, whatever, you know, listening to the fans. And that is, you were the person I think they wanted to see, chase him and eventually, you know, try and take it off him, which you did.
Yeah, I still remember.
I mean, when you finally took the title, you know, the Electric Ballroom, you know, the place exploded. The fans wanted to see it change, and for so long, obviously, you know, because of their hatred for Jimmy and basically, you know, their love for you, so to speak. Take us back to that day, you know, that when you got to the building, the build up and stuff like, and the match, and obviously the win.
I remember just sitting there at one point, right, and I was doing like a little photo shoot just beforehand. We was there with James Muscle, for a portrait of a wrestler, and I remember just looking out over the ballroom and it was completely empty, and I was just seeing all these things like. At one point, Jim Smallman carrying a big table and putting it under the ring for me. It's just like, oh, like, do you know what I mean? Like one of us is probably going to get murdered tonight. I remember, like, being up in the dressing room, like, on my own, walking down the stairs, and I see guys like Flash Morgan, like, say, like, go on, go and kill it, like, do what you know how to do. And just, I walked out. I don't know, because I wanted the entrance as well. The entrances were just so cool. Like, cause I've always gone on, like, the Assassin's Creed gimmick. I've always stuck with it because I'm a massive Assassin's Creed fan. Love it. And I think it, like, suits me down to a T. Like, the work in the dark to help the light style thing. So I remember making that entrance and I saw, like, Rob Lynch and Jane Davis, who are, like, two of my closest friends in wrestling right now. And like, I had my back, and I saw Jimmy there, and I saw Paul there, and I saw that big Omega guy there. And I looked at you, like, when this match was going on, the crowd just was not quiet at any point. Like, we were, like, going through them at points, like, chucking people into the crowd. Like, we were just going for it. Like, and the funny thing was, that I had a wedding the week after the Progress match. And I remember, like, taking, a burning hammer onto a chair. And I just went face first into a chair, and I literally got this big swell right under my eye, and it was so huge. And I remember Chris Roberts, was it Chris Roberts? Or might have been Chuck? Oh, it was one of them, I can't remember. Went, "You all right?" And the only words I just had to utter, because I was the best man, I went, "The wedding." No! But it was just, I remember hitting him with the shooting star on the back, bang, and I hit him with the red arrow on the front, boom, one, two. And when he kicked out, I was like, oh, you're kidding me. Like, do you know what I mean? And everyone was literally just like, he's got nothing left. Like, he's generally, that's it. Because everyone's seen Jimmy kick out the Essex Destroyer as well. So, like, the only way I could probably do it if I'd done it off the top rope on him or something like that, I don't know. But I just remember this at one point, and I hit him with the Destroyer, and I start climbing the top rope, and then I hear one guy just go, 6:30. And I literally just closed my eyes because I've been trying to practice it in the ring as well. Like, people don't notice, but I only done it once outside Progress, and that was like on a crash mat. And even then, it like took me like ages to get that right because you don't know the mental game that takes on you. I was staring at that crash mat for like hours and hours. Like, I had to get down a couple of points, like a 3-hour training session, and at points I was just like, oh, I've got to get back up. I'll do the 6:30. I was able to do it on the crash mat, but it's a whole different thing when you're, like, staring at the guy. And the fact is, when I done it in Harwich and he moved, and I just, oh, my God, it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And the fact is that the doctor said I was 2 inches away from breaking my neck. So, looking at that.
So, you know, like you said, you went up to the top rope and you heard a guy say 6:30. Was you genuinely not going to do the move until you heard that and you thought, you know what, I'm just going to go for it?
Yeah, on hand on heart. I was there. I shut my eyes for a second. If you watch it, I shut my eyes for a second and I hear 6:30. I open my eyes. I have a little look around. I look at my hand and I go, you know what? It's time. I'm going to do it. And jump, tuck, pray. I hit the 6:30 for like the first time in God knows how long. I can't remember the last time I actually hit it. Was like November 2014, so I hit it in July 2015. So that's how long I went without hitting that bloody move. And it, like, You just don't know the effect it takes on people, because that was the move that I could do with my eyes closed. And the fact that I just couldn't do it, I just remember being on the top rope, and I was just like, oh, fuck it, he's going to kill me anyway. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I don't do it, I'm always going to have that thing in the back of my head. But I've got the power to do it again now. Like, I haven't got the nerves anymore. I've been busting it out like it's this, like it's a swanton bomb, I guess. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's easy to do, but I don't do it as often, just because I want people to understand, if I do the 6:30 on your shows, it means that you've looked after me as a wrestler, you've looked after me as a person. I respect the company that you do it for, just because, like, it just goes to show that I'm still terrified of the move. I'm brutally terrified of that 6:30. And if I do it on shows, it means I trust the promoters, I trust the promotion, and I want it to succeed.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing with certain moves. You know, people always say, you know, maybe don't do them every single match. So when you do them, when you do it in a match, it means something. More. And that's such a big move. And like I say, when it came around in that match, the fact it'd been so long, you know. You obviously got the guy who said 6:30, but then the pop.
It was just one guy. That was the thing. It was one guy. I was right by the front, and he was wearing like a British flag jacket. I can remember. Yeah. Like, I just remember standing up there, and he went 6:30. I literally was just like, "Oh my god!" Really? Like, and you, I was just like, "Go on, then, I'm gonna do it."
Yeah. But the pop from the crowd as well when you hit it is because they knew the backstory of you. You're not so much threatening to do it, but you know, you're talking without using the words of doing it in a match, but you never actually ever did it because that fear was there.
The first time I even, like, when I did the injury, the first match I had back was against Paul Robinson in chapter 16. And I remember placing him down. I remember looking at the top rope and doing a circular motion with my hands, and it's like, I jumped to the top rope and everyone was going like, no, doing the Daniel Bryan thing, because they knew that, like, it generally, like, nearly killed me. So everyone was like, we want you to live, don't go to the top rope. But then, in the same side of things, there were the other people that were like, he's got to get over the fear, because otherwise he's never going to, like, progress, I get what a word to use. But, like, he's never going to progress anywhere. So, like, that's where Jump, Tuck, Pray came from. So, like, they all just, like, the fans just started saying it, Jump, Tuck, Pray, Jump, Tuck, Pray. I was just like, wow, they get, like, because a load of people are, like, really, fans don't, like, care. If you went tomorrow, they wouldn't care. They just look for the next person. And it's like, well, for those times that they've said it, any time they've said Jump, Tuck, Pray, it's like, that kind of meant something to me, because they were generally wanting me to get over this bloody fear of the 6:30.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I was at that show, that Chapter 16 show. I remember it well. Remember it well, because obviously that's also the show that Styx and RJ had their match and all that type of stuff. Yeah, remember that show well, and your match with Paul, which was, like I say, it was one of them, obviously, because you'd been a tag team and you really looked like, you know, you used to act like you were brothers as opposed to tag team partners type thing. You know, you were really close. You could sense that. And then obviously he turned his back on you, and obviously it led into that match and stuff like that. So, yeah, remember it well. You know, I've been to like a decent amount of progress shows, but my last one, unfortunately, was way back at 21. That's where you defended the title against Mark Haskins. Everyone who listens to Sean now, how much I think of Mark Haskins, you know, he's right up there as one of my personal, you know, favourite wrestlers.
Mark Haskins is like generally one of the guys that, like, behind the curtain has been helping me out, like, so much, like, with just little things to do in the rings, and it just helps me out so much. And, well, the family is just lovely, like him, Vicky, little Jack, little Lily. I love his family to bits, and the fact is that he's just a generally nice guy. So it's just like, I can't say enough good things about Mark Haskins. He's one of the best wrestlers in the UK, and the fact that he doesn't get like the credit that he deserves is like criminal.
Well, I mean, to hear them terms, hear that term, you know, doesn't get enough credit for me. He does sound criminal, because like I say, I think his style of wrestling, he's right up there. You know, he's so fluid in the ring. Everything he does is so crisp, and that's why I used to top of the tree. top of the tree for me. You know, you've got yourself in like what you call a cruiserweight style, and you've got Zach in like a technical style. And for me, Mark can mesh the two together. And when he does, he's just the best. Just the best. Going back to the match, like I say, it's something else that's got praise worldwide. Again, I've seen things. It's not like blowing smoke up your ass, so to speak. I've read and heard people from abroad, you know, talk about it and just how good it was. Again, you've had many matches with Mark. Where's that rank?
Mark Haskins, yeah.
Yeah, the Progress one, Chapter 21, where's that rank,
The Progress one is legit one of my favourite matches I've ever done. I think that was the high time, because loads of people were saying, once again, oh, the Cruiserweight can't be a headliner of a show, and it was just like, I kind of wanted just to show people that I wasn't just a Cruiserweight, so I wanted to really get on the mat with Mark, and at one point, like, at the beginning, you could see me actually, like, wrestling the guy, like, literally trying to, like, out-wrestle him, and I succeed at some points. I mean, Mark's, like, once again, a fantastic wrestler, and, like, he's, like, insane at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and, like, at one point, I got the better of him at it, so, like, it's not that I'm not a one-trick pony. I am learning stuff, like, gradually. Like, people just got to remember, this is only my fourth year wrestling, so I'm going to start, like, learning different things. Like, I mean, I want to get into kickboxing, I want to start doing more Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and doesn't mean my style is going to change, but it's just nice to know, like, if I did go against a guy like Mark Haskins ever again, that I can defend myself.
Yeah, for sure. Other than that type of stuff, you're more like, I mean, I don't know what, obviously, training you've had so often, and like, what you've trained, as I said, because obviously you cruise when you like doing the high risk offense type of things. But, you know, I imagine if you're looking into other than jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, whatever, looking at more technical side, like, okay, for when you face guys like Zach and things like that as well.
Yeah, they are wrestled Zach at Rev Pro, and he wrestled circles around me. I couldn't even get a grip of him. Every time I had him, he was just escaping. I was just like, there's no point in me trying to wrestle you, I'll just kick you.
Yeah, I mean, some of his ways of getting out of moves is intriguing, as watching some of the things he puts people in. You know, watching his escapes from little things. It's just
The guy's legitimately like butter. You can't actually get a hold on this guy without it just like slipping through your fingers.
Yeah, for sure. And a bit of a downer, you know. You actually went on to obviously lose the title to that dastardly villain Marty Scurll. I mean, thoughts on Marty and how he's changing in the 4 years like you've been wrestling out, how you've known what you've seen him come from Party Marty to now, and obviously thoughts on the match and things like that.
Well, everyone knows that me and Marty, like, in life, we just don't get along. But like, however, I've got nothing but respect for the guy. I just feel like he's probably another guy who's holding the flag really high for British wrestling. But the match that we had at Rev Pro and the match that we've had at Progress is like up there with definitely like my favourite matches that I've ever done. And the fact is that we done that match twice in like 1 week. I think it just goes to show, and it, like, there were some similarities of it, but like a lot were different. Like we're obviously like doing each other's homework, and we're obviously like trying to feed off one another. And the first time I got introduced to Marty Scurll was when he was doing that Party Marty thing. And although it was cool at the time, the stuff that he's doing right now, second to none, he's probably one of the best in British wrestling. I could see him going places, whether it's like Japan or whether it's like some stuff in the States, like whatever he does. But no matter what he does, he thoroughly deserves it. The guy's a masterclass.
Yeah. Definitely. Obviously, like I say, the years I've been watching British wrestling, I've seen him evolve, so to speak. Now he's got it down to a T, and what he's doing now. And I think, like you say, you know, what Jimmy did as a bad guy, was right up there, and it'd be hard for anyone to top that in that type of role. But Marty's getting up there, I think what he did to Chris Travis at that Chapter 21 we were talking about, you know, really solidified his stance as the, you know, British wrestling's biggest villain, to excuse the pun, you know. That's what he wants to be known as, and that night was what he did to Trav.
Himself as the villain.
That's it, most definitely. If anyone was on the fence, you know, about, you know, still wanting to cheer him, that should have been the turn of the screw to say, you know, do one. I don't want none of you to cheer me. I'm a bastard and treat me like one type thing, wasn't it? Yeah. So, you know, moving on, sticking with yourself, you know, moving on, you know, your popularity overseas by like your online presence and stuff like, you know, RevPro being available online and Progress Without On Demand and stuff, you know, you got the chance to work for PWG at the, as you mentioned earlier, prestigious, you know, Battle of Los Angeles 2015. Tell us how it came about and how you felt when you got the call or however you got contacted about it.
Well, I love telling this story because I could generally have not done PWG at one point. So I bought a PWG DVD, like 2 weeks before I got the email through. And I don't check my emails very much. I've recently only just started doing it. And I remember seeing, like, PWG Wrestling on my emails. And I was like, oh, that must be the receipt. So, like, what you do on, like, the iPhone to delete an email, you, like, scan it across and you press delete, right? Luckily, I accidentally clicked it instead of scanning it across and deleting it. And as it came up, it just went, would you be interested in the booking? And I was like, what? Like, I was about, oh my God, I nearly deleted this. Like, it was just so crazy to just think, like, I at first I thought it was even like a rib. Like, people were like playing like, a massive joke on me. Like,
imagine that. You miss the email, you delete it by accident, you didn't get back to them, thinking, this guy, man, didn't even respond to us, never mind, he hasn't accepted that.
I bought a DVD from him, I was like, oh, it must be the receipt. Like, do you know, when you buy something, it's just like, here is the receipt. Like, do you know what I mean? I was just like, oh my God, imagine that. Like, I missed the Battle of Los Angeles, no one even knows who I am. Like, and it would all have been because, like, I deleted the bloody email.
Was it all done, obviously, when you, obviously, you would have responded to them and stuff like that? Was it all done via email, or did you ever, like, talk to them beforehand via, over the phone or whatever?
No, it was all handled via emails.
Yeah.
So, like, that's how it all came about.
And all the details sorted out and stuff like that. Nice one. So, obviously, in over the weekend at the tournament, you know, you had three matches. First, you got to, you know, beat your good friend Mark Andrews again. You've had some great matches in the past, and then so you had that one. Then you faced that guy again, Matt Sydal, before obviously eventually, unfortunately, falling to, you know, Speedball Mike Bailey. Again, you spoke about the crowd earlier from when you were behind the curtain. What was it like as being in that ring and being in front of the fans and the overall experience?
I felt very, very humble, if I'm honest, man, just because, once again, I think there was like a smattering of people that knew who I was. Like, maybe like one third knew who I was. So when they started doing the Osprey thing, it was just like, oh, it's just natural to join in. Where the two thirds are like, okay, come on, kid, impress me. And when I walked through the curtain, it was just like, who's this pale white kid who's just like skinny as hell and like thinking that he can come in here and do like this pit? But they were just going nuts at points. And just I feel like me and Mark definitely showed that we definitely belong in the US Indies as well. Like, there was one guy that really made me laugh. It was when me and Mark were doing stuff. No, we didn't even lock up. I even say to Mark, there's always one guy. And it was, some guys went, fuck TNA. It was like, oh, there's always one guy. Here he is, like, in the background there. But, like, by the end of it, people still to this day are still, like, messaging me just going, that's one of the best matches they've ever seen. And I feel like me and Mark have definitely, like, got some of the best chemistry, like, you could ever have. So, just to be in that ring, that audience, just that country in general, to wrestle for PWG, I was so honoured and so humbled just to be inside that ring. It was just a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you really impressed there because they brought you back for, was it All-Star Weekend, where you faced Trevor Lee and Kenny Omega on subsequent nights. I mean, Lee is a top wrestler. I got to see him live for myself for the first time a few weeks back, and he's come out of his shell over the last year and a half as well.
But
Kenny Omega, yeah.
But I'm just saying that Kenny Omega, you know, he's way out there when he's doing his thing. And lately in PWG, obviously, doesn't wear like his New Japan garb, like, well, as in his Bullet Club gear. He starts wearing his colourful tights and he has his imaginary chainsaw and that. Talk us through being in the ring with Kenny when he's in that frame of mind.
Bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. Yeah. It's in a world, I mean, it's a different world. There's that moment where he was just like, from Pokemon Stadium, and that crowd has went, ah! I was just like, where am I? Where am I? Like, this is not real life, but I'm kind of digging it right now. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. It was just really funny. And the moment he just gave, like, was going to do that chainsaw on my head, I was like, no, this ain't going on my head, mate. And I'll let people buy the DVD to find out where I put that chainsaw. But,
of course. Yeah, definitely. We don't want to spoil nothing because it hasn't been released
yet. Oh, no, the trailer's been released. The trailer's look at the trailer and you'll find out what I do with that chainsaw.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing Kenny wrestle myself some years back, way before he was in New Japan. I think as far as Japanese wrestling's going, he was just working for DDT. And I remember then looking at him, he was wrestling Zach, funny enough. I remember looking at him thinking, this guy's a bit strange. He's always seems to be out there, if you know what I mean. And I just remember commenting, because he's like a family-friendly crowd, and just some of the things he was saying, I thought, oops, I don't think this is going to go down too well. And now he's, like I say, he's moved on a bit, joined New Japan and Bullet Club and whatever else.
Proper, nice guy. Most definitely.
One last note on PWG. Someone we've talked about, I'll just mention his name. Our very own, as in a British guy. Our very own Zack Sabre Jr. is the world champion there now. I'm guessing, you know, you wouldn't turn down a chance to face him over there in Reseda for the title.
Oh, I'll never turn down a chance to face Zack. I mean, I feel like I've got a long way to go because my last two matches in PWG, I lost the pair of them back to back. I want to kind of come back stronger if I ever do come back. I hope I get to come back. But if I ever do come back stronger, but before, even if I was offered that, I just want to say personally, it's actually incredible to see that Zack Sabre Jr. is the PWG like heavyweight champion. It's just mind-blowing to think that this guy that I once watched in a wrestling ring when I was 12 years old is like the leader of British wrestling in some strange way, and in another way, it was just like so deserved. Like that crowd is on fire with Zach. They absolutely love him. And I wish I can't tell you how much I wish I was there to see him win that title, but I'm just so proud of British wrestling right now and him. The fact that he's gone over there, and we're kind of like the talk of the town right now, the European Six.
Yeah, and it's well deserved as well. You offer, obviously, you all offer something different when you go over there, and it's good to mix things up. I said it was one last thing on PWG. It's just something you said then that's made me think. Of their like core roster, is there anyone, you know, specific you'd like to wrestle? Think you wouldn't like getting in there and facing them over there?
I want to face Ricochet over in PWG. I think that would just be mental. I think people's minds would be blown. I'd love to do me and Marty down there. But I want to put this out to him because I feel like loads of people really want to see it. But if PWG wants a new tag team, I would love to personally do myself and Mark Andrews versus Ricochet.
It's a box.
Inside Out.
Oh.
And the box as well. Completely forgot about the box.
Stick it in there.
I best put them over as well. The Bucks are pretty much the best tag team, like, ever. So if the Bucks ever want to face myself and Mark Andrews, let's do Britain versus America over in your own home soil.
Yeah, that would be something to see for definite. I'm sure that's going to happen somewhere down the line. If not over, I think it'll happen over there.
Me and Mark Andrews done a tag while we was over in like TNA doing the UK tour, and we didn't do nearly as much as we could do. So I guarantee you, if anyone puts me and Mark Andrews as a tag team, I guarantee you we're just going to blow the roof off the place.
It's me back again, guys. Stuart Rogers. Like I say, we had the technical difficulties with the interview, and that's where it ended, right there. As Will was mentioning about how he thought that he and Mark Andrews would make a great tag team over in the UK or across the pond over in America. Like I say, you know, hopefully I can catch back up with him when he comes back from Germany in the 16-carat tournament. You know, because obviously, like I say, there's quite a bit more I want to speak to him about, and I'm guessing there's probably bits of stuff that you guys want to hear him talk about as well. So we'll try and endeavour to get Will back on and finish that interview off. But I hope you enjoyed what you did hear. Please share it around on your social media. If you can, on your Facebook, your Twitters, whatever, let people know that we had Will on. Like I said at the start of the interview, you know, he's the talk of the town as far as the indie guys go, and like I say, people in America and all over Europe and the UK, of course, you know, are big on Will Ospreay and talking about him quite a lot, and it's well deserved as well. So like I say, we look forward to hopefully getting him back on and finishing that off. So just to close for this week, guys, thanks for listening, of course. Show your support by checking out the website, theindiecorner.com. A lot of previews, reviews, articles, columns, etc. going up on there. You know, we've got the Facebook page, facebook.com/theindiecorner. And, of course, there's the Twitter, which you can find twitter.com/ the Indie Corner, or at the Indie Corner if you want to go direct to it via your own Twitter account. Yeah, any support is welcomed, and like I say, very grateful for it. So like I say, hope you enjoyed that, and hopefully we can be back on next week, and if we're really lucky, you never know, I might have actually the second part of that interview with Will. So until then, guys, take care.
Hey everybody out there, this is the new flavor, the King of Swerve, Shane Strickland, and you are listening to the number one independent wrestling podcast in the UK, The Indie Corner. Say enough.